Welcome to CI, Confronting the Issues, bringing a progressive faith perspective to the issues of today. In San Francisco with Epiphany Day edition of CI, Confronting the Issues. And happy Epiphany to those who follow the church calendar. This is the day celebrating the visit of the Magi to the baby Christ, although now we kind of, evangelicals especially, deal with the grown-up Jesus. This is a day to honor the coming of the light and the recognition of that. And so I hope that this program brings you a little bit of light and enlightenment on this Epiphany, and that you're enjoying some light and enlightenment in your lives today. And joining me today on kind of a different topic or different way that we're doing the show is Dr. Craig Martin, the author of a book, Elemental Love Styles, which gives a way of evaluating your personality, strengths, and needs related to relationships. Not just romantic relationships, but relationships across the board. And it's a great context for dealing with that. And so, Craig, if you'd like to take a moment, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your book.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for that introduction. And I wanted to just say how happy I am to be on the show with you. I was a chiropractor for a long time in New York, and when I realized that most of the work that I was doing was turning out to be guidance work, I went ahead and became an interfaith minister, and from there practiced for many years in New York City and now in Los Angeles doing counseling for individuals and couples. That experience of being in the healthcare profession and then working with people with their emotional issues and spiritual issues, combined with my own personal pathway for not only romantic relationships but having relationships with family and friends, led me to writing Elemental Love Styles. So I'm really happy to be here to talk about that today.
Well, great. I know that most of you that are regular listeners to this program are more accustomed to a probably more political style topic or something that seems a little more directly faith applicable. But, you know, we're all humans and we all are in relationship. And this program deals with our relationship with the divine, but we're also in relationship with others, other people, whether it's coworkers, parents, children, brothers, sisters, and, of course, romantic relationships, lovers, and spouses, or significant others, as we talk about in San Francisco a lot.
One of the things that I heard, just which is even in the confronting the issues topic and spiritually, is the idea of intimacy between people. And one of the paths towards getting to know ourselves is having another individual get to know us. And for the divine spark that's within us all, if there's a part of us that's a soul or it's a transient energy that we're composed of, that part of us is something that we're supposed to be here to get to know. And it's primarily through relationships that we're able to get in touch with parts of that soul that we're not able to directly view ourselves.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think we are designed, regardless of your view of evolution or human development, that's not what we're talking about, but something in the human design, we are built for relationship. Relationship with each other, relationships with the divine. It's inherent in our basic structure as people and our humanity to be in relationship. So the issue now becomes, you know, what's positive and what's negative relationship. And again, our responsibility, I think, as a sentient, thinking, reasoning being, is that to get to know ourselves and so that we can optimize and be the best stewards of those relationships and stewards of our own souls and energy and emotional well-being.
Right.
Kind of our own emotional doctor.
Right. And I think that there are actually really few ways that are simplified enough and concise enough for people to be able to get in touch with who they are. It's not a lot of people that are necessarily putting themselves in therapy, and psychology is often a word that really alienates people, and yet the essence of getting to know who we are, what our strengths and challenges are, and how we can work those out is part of what it means to get along in a relationship with another person. There's a thing in relationships that's called sublimation of the ego. In common language, it's called compromise, and it means that we can't always get our way with someone else. And when we're in a relationship with someone, we find out just how often we need to compromise our own needs in order to accommodate theirs.
Yes, and we find out how often we're willing to compromise that. I think that's the failure point. I can look back at relationships of mine that failed and look at the times of not knowing until I was in the relationship. When I hit that point, I was just not willing to compromise on.
Right.
And, you know, if I would have known that ahead of time, I could have saved a lot of pain for myself and my former partner.
Right.
And so I think that becomes important. And as people of faith, we're no different. We're human beings. We, you know, our heart still has four chambers. You know, we have the same kind of neurosynapse as every other human. So we enter into relationships, and the fact is, in our churches, the divorce rate is the same as it is in the secular world.
Right.
And that's a sad commentary to say, but it's true.
Yeah.
And so it's inherent on us to improve that. And so I'm very glad to have you with us, Craig.
Thanks so
much.
And I think
as we start, I'd like you to explain a little bit in Elemental Love Styles, what Craig has done is broken down personality or groups of needs, emotional needs, and kind of metaphorically described them in a context of the basic elements of fire, water, air, and earth.
Correct.
And being able to see those. And I read the book. I got about 3/4 of the way through it. I have not completed it. But I found I am a fire and water, like you are.
Right.
And I said fire and air in one of my emails, but I had misread.
Yeah, that's... I
was looking at the wrong end of the chart.
Yeah.
But I found it to be a very useful context. So if you could talk a little bit about how you arrived at that context.
Sure. I think there's a couple of layers to it. The first layer of my acquaintance with the elements comes from my work as a holistic doctor, and then my studies of just the history of healing, that the elements, the natural elements, have been in wellness, have been a concept in wellness for thousands of years. We know if someone has too much fire, then they actually have a fever. If they don't have enough fire, they have the chills. If they have too much water, they have inflammation. If they don't have enough water, they're dehydrated. And all the elements connect with wellness. So that's one facet of it that I think I saw in our lives. The second important facet of that is that as an interfaith minister and in my studies of Native American culture and also ritualism and also being an astrologer, I know that the foundation of Western mysticism, what we find in astrology or the Kabbalah or ancient Judaism or even in something like Native American traditions where they would call in the four directions which were assigned with the four elements. So the four elements is a basic concept that I found in my, my years of cross-cultural and cross-religious study to be something that we find, you know, a kind of across the board in culture. And certainly in Western culture, the four, fire, air, water, and earth, have been very present in medicine and in mystical thinking. So between that and seeing it in my own practice in wellness,
but
I realized...
We just lost the phone signal.
From me?
My signal was connected. Oh, we're back with you. Terrific.
Oh, okay. Yes, no?
Don't know if... picked it up on the air, but remotely I missed part of your description of the connection to the basic elements. We picked up the part related to Native American, the Great Circle of North, South, East, West.
Got it. Okay, well, it's just simply that you asked me about how did I get the elements as a part of the book talking about relationships, and it's that the elements exist in our cross-cultural experience, not only in medicine, but also in spiritual thought. So that's really how I got, I brought the elements over to a kind of psychological profile of people. I thought that if it could be simplified that easily, and in my research and my experience now, it can be, that people can begin to understand. Remember, I say that knowing that you have an elemental type, an elemental style, is not an effort to pigeonhole people. It's an effort to give them some kind of a foundation of self-understanding. We have that in a limited way, but culturally we don't often say, oh, well, here's a certain model for you to start to begin to understand what you need or how you behave or what you might need to work on in your personality in order to get along with people better.
Yeah, I think, what I kind of observe, and I've traveled a fair bit in my adult life, both professionally in various jobs and assignments, and for fun, but we live in kind of a, I refer to kind of a didactic society, that we rely on what can we read, what can we learn, what can we kind of put in this scientific or Greek-based mechanical view of the universe that can be manipulated, learned, and changed around, rather than as in a Native American culture where you'd sit around the council fire and these lessons would be imparted to you over time in stories, in lessons, in day-to-day life, in dealing with your extended family, father, grandfather, mother, grandmother.
Right. And through accountability. Through being an accountable individual to a community. This is something that I think you and I had talked about briefly, was that there's a certain kind of an accountability that's lacking now in intimacy because we can move on to the next person so easily. There's no real reason to have to do a kind of really deep, intimate exploration with somebody. As soon as they disappoint us, we can move on. The community has become something that we don't really tap into as strongly as we did, you know, many years ago. And that's one thing that's caused a real problem for people with intimacy issues. They don't feel like they really need to. They don't understand the importance of it.
Yeah, I think we've kind of consumerized romance and intimacy into this, you know, we could just go get the new product. We don't like this product, we go get the new one.
Right.
We don't like this model, we go get the 2010 model.
Exactly.
And
romance, we've confused romance with love.
Romance, yeah. Yes, in fact, romance is a fairly new concept, really.
It is.
When you look at relationships, it's you look at the ancient stories of arranged marriages and cultures where that was.
Right.
And it seems like a long time, and I remember my grandparents, you know, well, they'll learn to love each other or that. We used to kind of poo-poo that. But, you know, there's a certain wisdom in that that comes from the commitment, I believe, that, you know, it is more difficult to leave than to stay, and so you have this cost-benefit thing in your head where, you know, it's beneficial to stay, and we've lost some of that today.
Right. What happens in the staying is that we're actually forced to grow spiritually because we hopefully look inside to find the love. It's exactly what you just said, which is they will learn to grow, to love each other. They'll learn to love each other. This is what all couples have to do over time anyway. Even if you start off with the magical romantic attraction, you still have to learn to love this individual. And if you don't have a commitment to that loving, then you certainly can't have a lasting relationship.
Absolutely. There's a great line in a song that I heard years ago when I was in a different religious tradition, a bit more conservative, but there's a great song that love is not a feeling, it's an act of the will. And I'm learning more and more the truth of that statement, that you can have the romantic attraction, the sparks, but that sooner or later comes a time when the feeling recedes, and you have to be committed to say, I'm going to get past the squeezing the toothpaste at the wrong end, or leaving the toilet lid up, or whatever,
right.
Burning the toast, or whatever. I'm going to get past that, and I made a commitment to do that. That's
right.
A choice. So I thought one of the most fascinating things, besides this context of the four elements, which is pretty universal in our culture, especially Western culture, was the idea that you bring with it of the deeper needs. We all talk about you're not meeting my needs or you're meeting my needs, but I think that I learned a long time ago when I was designing things for people and graphics and things, that people think they know what they need, but they don't really know until you get into the process.
Right.
And so this really gave a way to quickly move into and start examining what you really needed. And so could you talk a little bit about your arrival at kind of that, since we're talking about epiphanies, your epiphany for that?
Right. Well, I did. First of all, I did have an epiphany for that, because my own, relationship life at that time in the 80s was quite torrid, and God only knows what I thought I was looking for. But I sat for a few years after that, tumultuous period of my life at my home in upstate New York at the time, that I had a retreat house there from New York City. And I sat and I thought, why isn't this working? And but it just seemed like I started thinking that wouldn't it be nice if I just could meet somebody that I got along with, like they met my needs and they offered me something that, and then I thought the most marvelous thing, which was that people love in different ways. And that was something quite unique for me at the time, that people don't all love the same. Like, I may bring a certain kind of love to the table for somebody, and then that's my idea of love. But someone else might, be offering something different than that. And if I don't recognize that as love, if I don't have a receptor for that, then I might miss it. I might not realize that I'm receiving love from that person. So that combination with also, well, what were my needs for love? I thought, okay, well, I must also have deeper needs for love. And that actually came, as I know you read, from a Catholic priest who was in my practice as a chiropractic practice. And I had been dating a man for a while, and who I thought was really great, and it had been a few months, and then it sort of got very disillusioned, and I found out that he wasn't at all what I had thought that he was. And I remember asking this priest, who really was just a patient of mine at the time, can I ask you a question? Of course he said yes. And I described the situation, and I asked him why was this happening? And he said to me, perhaps this person is not meeting your deeper needs for love. And that phraseology, your deeper needs for love, was fairly profound for me, because I had never considered that we could have shallow needs for love or superficial needs for love, and that what were deeper needs for love. And then it connected with that people loved in different ways, and that we needed different things from love. So there was sort of simultaneous philosophizing that was going on in my life at the time, and this particular gentleman kind of catalyzed this concept for me that we had deeper needs. And then again, based on my history of study, I realized that those deeper needs could be categorized using the natural elements. It was quite a wake-up, though, for me.
I think in time we get that kind of insight into our own lives, into something that's happening with us. It's an extremely profound moment. And it's so important because we tend to live for those moments, sometimes even if we don't realize it, but especially in a culture today where we're so sensation-driven and, you know, and immediate-driven, and we want, you know, we want patience and we want it now.
Exactly.
Kind of thing that it gets to be that knowledge that there's kind of depth chart to need and love is sort of revolutionary because that's not what we see every day, even though it's true and it's borne out and as we see it, but we don't see it in the books and literature we read or the advertising messages we see. And we're about
we are all taught to need the same thing. We are all encouraged that our basic set of needs, especially in relationships, can be defined by a simple set of cultural norms.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, or products.
And that of cultural products, exactly. And it's
you know,
not
the
true.
Right toothpaste, the right shampoo, the right car,
yeah.
The right dish,
and it's not
the right
true.
That, and you'll be happy.
Happy. Right. You'll be happy. And it's not true. I mean, it's one of the great fallacies that's perpetrated on people, and one of the results of their greatest unhappinesses is, you know, the idea that cultural products and cultural what's being fed to us by you know basically the media, social norms is not really what's going to make us happy.
No, and I think you know being satiated on a short-term basis is not the same as being happy.
And no, that's like addiction.
And just as we've equated romance and this kind of short-term effect with love,
right.
We've done the same thing about need versus want and happiness versus, as you said, addiction. And as we're coming up about a minute away from break now, I want to encourage our listeners that the phone numbers that they can call are listed on the website that you're listening from. Please feel free to call in. Don't be afraid to. We've all had our shots here, and we're all very happy to receive your questions or comments. But we'll pick up the thoughts about that difference between needs and wants and kind of moving on to blending the styles and people not being a single style when they come up as we get ready to head into our break here, which is going to be it's going to be a four-minute break. So we will be heading out just about now for a four-minute break. So we'll see you all in 4 minutes.
Hi, Peggy Lee Quayler here. Hey, thanks for listening to Stories Untold on BBS. And you can visit my website at cdbaby.com/cd/Peggy Lee with an A. You can purchase a copy there or write a review. And stay tuned for my next album project, That's Just Hollywood, coming out in June. I'll be sure Doug has a copy for BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com, the number one internet radio network on the planet.
Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X-Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. Your host, Brooks Agnew, believes everything we do will eventually affect the universe. He's trying to do that on purpose each Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the BBS Radio Network. Come where the results are always positive. Explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You'll be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch. X Squared Radio.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate?
Uh-huh.
Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution, if you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economist on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Hi, this is Robert Lee Kemp, the host of the Mr. Destiny radio show here on bbsradio.com. Tune in Monday nights on the late night section at 7:30 Pacific and 10:30 Eastern. I want to invite you to come and listen in or participate in our lively and informative shows. Would you like to know something about your special destiny? How about your personal relationships or your finances? Are you thinking of moving but not sure when or if you should? Did you just meet somebody and want to know whether or not you are compatible? Would you like to know when you will meet somebody new or have more business success? Or would you like some help understanding your life and yourself? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I may have some answers for you. Tell me your birthday and I can reveal your secrets, maybe even secrets that you don't even know. The system I use is described in my two books, Cards of Your Destiny and Love Cards, available in all major bookstores. Your birthday is the key to your birth card, and that card tells me everything about you. I invite you to come and learn more. I hope to see you then.
Hello. This is Wesley Snipes, and when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to Dr. Fred Bell in the Health and Sciences Show on bbsradio.com. Tune in or be tuned out.
We're back live with this edition of CI, Confronting the Issues, coming to you from the Leland Tea Company in San Francisco on this wonderful Epiphany Day, or celebrating the Epiphany of Light, the coming of light, and we hope that you have a little bit of epiphany today as you listen to our program. And joining me today here at the Leland Tea Company via telephone is Dr. Craig Martin, the author of the book Elemental Love Styles, where he's given us a wonderful context utilizing the basic elements of nature to be a context of evaluating our personalities, our wants, our deeper desires in the context of relationships and intimacy. And before we left on break, we were talking a lot about the difference between love and romance, between need and want, and kind of the things that we've been sold in our modern consumer culture that really they do not help our chances of intimacy at all. So if we could kind of pick those thoughts up a little bit, Craig, as we come back live.
Absolutely. And, you know, while I was on break, I went over and I looked up that song that you mentioned, which is Love is Not a Feeling by Don Francisco. And it's a Christian hymn, and I looked through the lyrics, and they're beautiful. They're beautiful. That the idea that Jesus made a commitment to people as well, and it wasn't all just fun. And sometimes love, and he made that commitment in love, and it wasn't always just fun for him necessarily. And this is the idea that I think people get confused about in romance and love, is that relationships are supposed to be fun all the time. And, you know, they are supposed to be fun. We're supposed to have companionship and understanding and support and all of those good things. But sometimes they're not fun because love is supposed to be able to bring us through those times. We're supposed to be able to find the love inside of us that carries us through conflict or disagreement or, you know, just having to deal with our own or someone else's darker qualities. So one of the things that's in Elemental Love Styles is a kind of a very nice, broken down, concise way of looking at what your stuff is. You know, in psychology, people talk about people's issues, but in common language, you know, people say, "Oh, that's your stuff," and it just means the difficulties that someone has in their personality that they either, you know, bring to the table when they have relationships, or that they're not really clear of how to change. They're not really clear of how to work with. And by change, I certainly don't mean that I think that people change. I don't necessarily think that's what they do, but I think they make different choices. I say that we have a characterological set of qualities, and what our choice to change is, whether we act from those qualities or not, which way we behave is definitely a choice, and we can then change the choices that we make, rather than, you know, necessarily changing our character, or the way what it is that we select from in our character. So as far as the elements go, and intimacy, we all have a specific thing that we also need to work on. We all have something specific in our personality that we need to work on. Our relationship is going to show us that, but if we're not willing to take a look at it, then it's going to be difficult to work on.
I think, that implied in all the times we say, he doesn't listen to me or she doesn't listen to me, or you're not hearing me or whatever, this implication of course, not meeting needs. But when you're seeking truth, I think in the scripture it talks about seek and you shall find. But if you're really seeking, you have to be open to the answer.
Right.
And you may not always like the answer.
Right.
But you have to be open to it regardless of whether you like it or not.
Right.
And because the answer is the answer.
Right.
And
that's why they say it'll set you free. Part of the freedom comes in actually admitting what the truth is. It frees you from the burden of your own self-deception. You know, where we think that we act a specific way. We think when we get into relationships that we are a certain way. We have an image of who we are. And intimate relationships, whether that's with a close friend or even with a child or a mother or father, sibling even, that's why the idea of the elemental relationship works for not just romantic relationships, but anyone that we're close to that we would be willing to, you know, I guess have an argument with, someone that we're close enough to be able to say to them, you know what, that just hurt me. This is an opportunity for the person who might have done something in the relationship to say either, oh, okay, I can see that, or, you know, examine what caused that in their own personality, so they don't do it with other people. And what we find a lot is that people are more willing to blame someone else for what's going on or what's going wrong in a relationship than taking responsibility for their own part. And that's where our conversation even becomes political, because we're always willing to blame and point the finger across the aisle and at the other side and at the other person, and never really willing to say, okay, what is our part in this conflict here?
Yes, and I think too there's a tendency in our culture and our society to take the essence of intimate relationships, be they romantic or business or professional, but intimate relationships at whatever status you want, and
right.
put it in this context of win and lose. So if we fail, we've lost.
Right.
And that's really not true. It may just be a question of, you know, it just doesn't fit me right. Or, you know, that jacket didn't fit me right. Or this person, you know, we just didn't fit together. It's not a judgment of, it's not a value judgment.
Right.
It's a judgment
failure.
Of the fact that we don't
right.
fit rather than
right.
the value judgment of good, bad, failure, success.
Right.
And so it's this business model again that we get.
Exactly.
Or this game model, competition model.
Exactly.
Of
competitive.
A relationship.
But exactly.
You know, even
that,
our,
that's exactly
even
right.
Language.
And people, right? Go ahead.
Even our language about romance, say, is very possessive and property driven. They're mine. This is my man. This is my girl.
Right.
This is, you know, just I think of the old, I was watching a movie with the old fashioned wedding vows about, you know, love, honor, obey, and I was just bristling. So who are they to say that? You know,
right.
the feminist grows up in me very quickly. So who is that man that I have to obey him? You know,
right.
I'm not seeking employment here.
No, of course, they even used to say man and wife.
Yes.
That changed, but a long time ago they used to say, now pronounce you man and wife. It's like,
gosh,
it was
no.
that whole idea that, you know, you finally had your, you know, your house help.
Yeah, you've got your domestic help now, so now we can take care of everything else, and I guess
right.
in today's market, if you're conservative enough or powerful enough in Congress, you can live on C Street and have your adultery paid for by the government.
By the taxpayer.
That's right. And you can get your Viagra and stuff. But anyway, get off that discussion.
That's funny, though. It's good. I like it.
But one of the other facts of getting into the book that I found very fascinating and very pleasing is that its broad applicability. That again, it's not just romance. It could be professional relationship, a
right.
familial relationship, or spousal relationship.
Right. Right.
I've had many people
who have, you know, been reading it now. And by the way, it is coming out on February the 2nd, so it's just a couple more weeks. I've had many people reading it and saying, "Wow, this is changing my relationship with my daughter." Like, I never really saw my daughter as a water type, a water style personality, just to give an example. And once I realized that she's just an emotional person, and that the book said, you know, give her emotional reassurances, tell her that you understand what's going on for her emotionally. She said that her relationship with her daughter changed like overnight. She just tried it once, and in their whole relationship, and I think the daughter was already in her early 20s, she had always just been trying to fix it for her, and that's not what her daughter needed. Her daughter simply needed to be able to be in an emotional space because she's operating, her lens is an emotional lens. She views the world through an emotional reality, which includes imaginative and, you know, feelings based and intuition, so that since this is the way that this person is living, what they most deeply need from someone who loves them is reassurances and validation of their emotional reality in the world. And until we start to get a handle on that, we don't really know what to be able to offer someone, because we have a specific notion of what love might be. And so we give this person, you know, whatever it is we know, like love is grand gestures or love is trying to fix it all the time for someone, but that might not be what they need. And so being able to look not only at ourselves, but what the needs of the people in our lives who we love is an essential part of getting along with them. You know, the book is subtitled, right, Create a Lasting Relationship. So the idea here is that people are very concerned about why don't relationships work out, and why do even brothers and sisters fall away from each other. And the basic idea is that it's because we don't really know what this other person needs from us and how to give it to them. When we don't get what we need from a relationship and we're not incredibly conscious, we become really angry. It makes us really angry when other people don't give us what we need in different ways. We become angry even in different ways. But still, that's the general feeling inside when someone supposedly loves us, but they just continually don't meet our needs.
Right, and I think the anger comes from the frustration of why don't they get it?
Right.
You know, all I need is this, why don't they get it? And I also love in the book the way that you address the multifacets of people that, in other words, like when I at the beginning of the program I said I am a fire and water.
Right.
There are other elements there too, but we're not everyone is just one thing or predominantly one thing.
Right.
And that you give a lot of allowance for that, the multidimensional parts of people in your book. And I found that when I went through just the discovery process of the element, I had always placed a higher point in my life on the earth aspect of me. And what I looked at in that was actually, there are only two of the questions involved where I really gave an earth answer to.
Right.
And so I had given this very small aspect of my personality
right.
the greater attention. And heed, when I can look back at times when that probably was not the best thing to do.
Right, that's interesting. So then, you know, in your own discovery, is I just had someone tell me that they always thought that they were more air, more cerebral. Turned out that they were more watery. As soon as they saw that, then they were able to say, oh, yeah, that's really true. So do you connect with the fire and watery part of your personality? And just again for your listening audience, the fiery part is the more creative, yet more willing to take the center of attention, a leadership role, somebody who's putting themselves out there, someone who actually is not intimidated by recognition or praise because they actually like that, they want that feedback for their ideas. And the watery part we discussed is the sensitive and more emotional part. Do you notice those parts in yourself?
Oh yeah, I think the best thing out of this process was noticing that how in my early adulthood, late teenage years, early adulthood, I really suppressed part of the fire and focused on smaller parts of my personality that now I'm freeing up a lot more, but to be able to see that
right.
was really a revelation.
Do you think you were not allowed?
I think, well, it's a combination of things. I spent a good number of my adult life in government service, military service primarily.
Right.
And I sort of suppressed, part of it was my good old Depression-era parents, bless their hearts, who, you know, in their attitude, work is not fun. It's not supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be work, after all.
Right.
And so these notions that growing up in the 50s and 60s that we developed of, wait, you know, you can find a career that you enjoy. You can get fulfillment from work. You know, things like that that you, that out of those kind of ideas, I subdued the creative and went into military and government service. But
yeah,
in those,
the more practical
moments where the creative shines.
Right.
This is
absolutely a point where your parents dictated for you what your style was going to be like based on their own values. So they encouraged you to simply honor that earthy, practical, regimented,
right.
rule-following. And then, of course, the military and government was perfect for that. You know,
yeah,
but you had to squeeze yourself into that.
Well, and what I found out was within that system, I excelled in special operations, unconventional operations, where now I can see where the fiery, the creative part, had to assert themselves even within that environment.
Right. Yeah, well, so you found an outlet for that, thank God. You weren't just pushing paper somewhere, lonely behind a desk.
No, I pushed boots a lot, pushed a lot of other stuff, but not paper.
Right. No, that's good that you were able to find, you know, the creative outlet that you needed. You know, because it's essential, otherwise we're really not happy. And I think in relationships we find that we're not happy if we're, you know, with someone who, for a fire type person, where we need to be with somebody that's capable of letting us take charge sometimes. Now, you can't be taking charge all the time or be a control freak, which could be a kind of fire negative thing. But at the same time, if you're not allowed to take control, if you're not allowed to make suggestions and have them go through, if you're not allowed to have your own vision of the way an experience should happen and then make that...
But right. Not really understanding themselves or their children, say, in my case, imposed a value system that was not really consistent with reality in regarding me. Because
your reality, right.
Yeah, and my reality. And it's not a comment on criticism. It's kind of a sad thing in a sense.
Yeah.
That they weren't given the kind of liberty of knowing, the freedom of knowing themselves better, to be able to allow me to know myself better, which it's a question of they would have, I feel certain they would have encouraged that had that been their experience.
Yeah, or had they had those values, you know, the value of allowing somebody to unfold who they are. For me, it totally connects me back to, our potential as people. Like, I feel that individually we're here to discover who we are so that we can then unfold our own individual purpose or potential, our reason for being, you know, and that we have a very hard time doing that if we don't have some idea of, you know, like what it is that we're made up of. So, and so many times, parents and other family, they don't like, you know, maybe what it is that they see in a child. They don't, you know, they see something, I don't know, it could be anything, you know, in a little boy or a little girl. It doesn't necessarily have to be the obvious example, like, and say that, well, if you've got a little boy and he's effeminate, then, you know, the parents are going to do everything they can to be like, why are you walking around on your tiptoes?
Yeah.
And stop that. And what are you doing that for? And you look silly. And all of that shaming to try and remold someone from their original character. And that original character can have very much to do, you know, with the elements, looking at it from an elemental point of view. It could have to do with that this individual is this kind of type. What about the macho father who ends up having a little boy who's an air type and all he wants to do is kind of read? He's just very cerebral.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a really pure air type, okay? It's an exaggerated example. It's just a little boy who likes to read. No, he doesn't. He's not effeminate. He's not at all. He's more of a geek type. Well, you know, the same thing's going to happen. He's going to get shamed for being that way. You know, he's not sporty. He's not taking that leadership role. He's not this or he's not that. And I think there's something very spiritually elevated about allowing people to be who it is that they are. As long as individually we're willing to work on our own issues, then it's fine to let someone be who they are. In the end, I have to accept my brothers and sisters. I have to accept my lover exactly the way I find them. I can't necessarily change any of them, but I can mention to them when I think they do something that's hurt me. And then they're all, you know, most of the people that I have in my life are fairly conscious, upstanding people. They care. You know, I think that in the end of Elemental Love Styles, I talk about caring about these people in your life, that if you love them, you actually care, you know, what impact you're making on them. And those individuals as mirrors, that they're in our lives to be able to mirror for us our behavior, good and bad. When we do something really kind or something that's beautiful and loving to somebody that's loving in our life, they mirror that for us too. They show us how happy they are. And it's not just a question of the negative thing. I just always say that it's the negative thing that causes a problem. No one is ever coming into my office because they've because of the good things that are happening in their relationship. So we focus a lot on, you know, the more negative mirror, because that's the thing that we need to work out.
Right. Well, I think we have our conversation has carried us past our break time, and we're actually getting closer to the end of the program. Oh, I hate it I love it when that happens. But as we come up, I have a lot of people to thank for today's program, especially my guest, Dr. Craig Martin. Author of the book. I really suggest to you listening out there to go out and invest in this book, Elemental Love Styles. It really is a fun context for self-discovery. And as a person of faith, I believe that part of the goal, even as it defining it in Christian terms, that part of Jesus' goal is to let us be who we were created to be. And that means knowing the truth about ourselves and discovering those truths about ourselves, and that part of the whole gig of spirituality, be it Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Native American, is to get to know ourselves within the context of our Creator and who we were created to be, which is the ultimate reality. And so the closer we bring those into sync, the closer we are to being in harmony with creation and our Creator. And so I really want to thank you for writing this book and bringing it to our attention. I, of course, want to thank the Leland Tea Company here in San Francisco, who gives us space and takes such good care of us and bakes such wonderful goodies. That if you're ever here in San Francisco and you like baked goods and tea, this is the place to be. And some special donors to this program, Dan Diaz of Lower Polk Neighbors here in San Francisco, a neighborhood association, John Alex Lowell, who's a member of my church congregation, who is a faithful supporter of this program, my friends at Lower Polk Neighbors who helped me physically set up this program, Chris Shulman, a close friend, also from the neighborhood association who helps me set up and was actually getting ready to start the program today in case I got held up at this meeting I was at with the chief of police. He was going to be a short-term fill-in host. And my top of the list are my engineers back at bbsradio.com, Seth and Don, who make it so easy. They handle all the heavy lifting for us, and they really do the bulk of the work to keep this on the air, even if we have little glitches with computers or stuff, or phone lines, as occasionally happens. And next program, in 2 weeks, I've got the Reverend Meg Rohrer. We're going to be talking about feeding the homeless or marginally housed here in San Francisco, and community gardening, but basically taking care of the least of these. And again, that's building off of our relationships and knowing each other, and which, again, as we wrap up, do you have any quick final thoughts, Craig?
Oh, no, I just wanted to thank you so much. I think we said a lot. I think that it was, you know, I've enjoyed the recommendation you just gave me, that you thought that it was a fun context for self-discovery. I think for me, spiritually, that's the foundation of spirituality, is self-discovery, and that if we can do that in a fun way, then I think I've achieved something that's beyond whatever I thought that I might have achieved. So for you to say that for me was really nice. Thank you so much.
Well, having grown up with brothers and sisters who are therapists, which leads me to a whole other set of angst, that looking at things, quote, self-improvement, self-discovery book, have not always been fun.
Right.
And to be able to come up to that is really for me, that's really amazing. And again, it's if it's in today's world, if it's not very fun or very enjoyable, we're not going to do it.
Right. This was the great challenge of putting this text together, was saying, here's a bunch of concepts about intimacy and closeness and inner growth and making better spiritual choices, and how am I going to make it, you know, at all interesting for people? And I knew that if I got them involved a little bit in characters from fiction, from television, gave them some examples, showed them some, you know, simple things like that, that it might be a more enjoyable experience to reflect on their own situation.
So get yourselves ready for some fun. Go buy or get a copy of Elemental Life,
Love Styles,
and curl up with it and have some fun while you read and learn about yourself. And they called the Lewis and Clark Expedition the Voyage of Discovery. And so do a little self-discovery, a voyage of self-discovery. And our clock is caught up with us, and we are out of here.
Perfect.
So until
Lucia,
next
you're
time,
a doll. Thank you so much.
We'll see you again on the next edition of CI in 2 weeks.
You have been listening to CI. You have been listening to CI, Confronting the Issues. For comments or questions on this or any CI program, contact us via the web at www.myciradio.com. I'm your host, Risha Ann Young. Join us for the next edition of CI right here on the BBS Radio Network, Channel 2.